If I'm going through introductions, so. Okay, we're good to go. Thank you everyone for coming once again. I guess this is the final official Carwell event. Thank you everyone who's come previously. I hope you gained from it. We end on a positive note after starting with such exciting topics as assisted suicide. We've worked our way past Tisha B'Av to Nachamu. And we will now discuss a more positive topic of save your seat right here.
Thank you.
Where we can watch you.
Nice.
And don't move. We've been discussing through over Shabbos the fundamentals of faith, the Yud Gimel Ikari Emunah, the 13 basic principles of faith that the Rambam has. We didn't come anywhere near finishing, so we're going to skip to the end now and discuss the last two. The Rambam, we have mentioned time and time again, his fundamental of faiths can be grouped into three different groups. The fourth, and these three groups of fundamentals basically represent that which every religion needs. You know what type of religion? The first group, you need a god. You need something to worship. If you don't have anything to worship, you can't have a religion. The next thing that you need is you need a revelation. If God, there's a God out there, but he doesn't tell you what to do, you can't very well have a religion doing whatever it is, because you don't know what it is. And the final and third step is that the God that you have has to be able to know whether you are in fact doing what you are supposed to be doing, and he has to care about whether you're doing it or not. So the last group, which we did not discuss at all, is what we call schar va'onesh, reward and punishment, that people are rewarded for doing that which is proper, and the reverse as well. Interestingly, beyond a general idea that we have to believe that there is such a thing called reward and punishment, the Rambam in his final two of the Yud Gimel Ikari Emunah, his final two principles of faith, insists that we, one, believe that there is ultimately a Messiah, that there is a Mashiach, and after that there is a Tchias HaMesim as well, that there is also a time in history where the dead come back to life and live again. We're going to focus mainly on the first of the two. Of the Ani Mamins, number 12 is the most famous one. It has the most songs. Ani Mamin b'muna shalema b'viyas ha-mashiach v'af al pisha yismanea im koze achakalo b'chol yom shiavo. Translated, Ani Mamin, I believe, b'muna shalema with full belief, b'viyas ha-mashiach that Messiah is going to come. The Afal Pisha Beisma, and even though he may be slow in coming, Im Kozayachakelo, I will still wait for him. Bechol Yom Shiavo, I'm expecting him to come every day. That, of course, is not the words of the Rambam. Those the Ani Mam is based on the Rambam. However, it's a pretty fair representation of what the Rambam said, which makes it a little odd. The first half is believable. I believe that the Messiah is going to come. But the question is, why do we add the second half? If he afal pisha yisra meya, even though he hasn't come yet. If you look at any of the other fundamentals of faith, we don't have this. But we don't say that I believe that God rewards good people and punishes bad people. And even though I go through life seeing that bad peoples are doing darn well and good peoples are getting their heads kicked in, despite all that, I still believe in it. Right? We do not say that, right? Even though that there are many of other places where it could have been said. So the question is, why is it only in this one of the 13 that the Rambam insists on adding this? And the reason for that seems to be that one does not just have to have an amorphous belief that out there, yeah, I believe in this, but one has to actively wait for the Mashiach. One has to actively expect the Mashiach to come on a regular basis. In fact, the Gemara tells us when a person dies, there's basically a short list of questions that you're going to get. Nasata v'munah, were you honest in business? Kavata itam l'Torah, have you learned Torah on a regular basis? And one of them is tzipisa l'Yeshua. Have you been actively waiting for the Mashiach to come? And we, in fact, in the Tefillah says it, say this many times, right? Es semach tovet adach v'hir tzatzmiach, why ki rishuascha ki vinu kol ayom? Why, I'm waiting for tzemach, who's tzemach? Tzemach David, the offspring of David, right? The offspring of David being the Mashiach ben David, the Messiah. Why? Because Kili Shuaskim, because every day I'm waiting for it. So it seems that part of the concept of the Messiah is not just theoretically believing it, but actually expecting it to come on a regular basis. Now the question is, how does that play out practically? What's the difference between theoretically believing in it and theoretically expecting them to come? They both seem to be somewhat theoretical. So people write that there are some things that we practically should do in order to better expect it. So for example, so this worked much better. Let's say I was in Chicago. So if you ask people, when are the Cubs going to win the World Series? And the answer tends to be, when Mashiach comes. That's when the Cubs are going to win the World Series. When you say that, you're not saying, I believe that the Cubs are going to win the World Series tomorrow. That's not what you're saying. You're saying, I believe that the Cubs are not going to win the World Series. I'm sorry for people who aren't catching the baseball references. The Cubs haven't won in over 100 years. That's the relevant piece of information here. Right? So when someone's saying that I believe this is going to happen here when Mashiach comes, what a person is basically saying is, just like I know Mashiach isn't coming anytime soon, so too, this event is not going to happen anytime soon. So that's improper, actually. Even though this is a standard saying, you don't think about it when you say it, but the idea is that when you're saying, when Mashiach comes, that's when it's going to happen. In the equivalent of V'rang D'yidin Zenin and Golos, no translation provided, one person is basically letting on to the fact that we're not expecting Mashiach, and this is the exact opposite of what we're supposed to be doing. It's interesting, the Gemara actually lists off one thing a person shouldn't do. And the one thing the Gemara lists off is that you shouldn't try to predict when it's going to come. A person shouldn't get up and say, I figured it out that Mashiach is going to come on X, Y, and Z date. Why not? The Gemara says, because if you're wrong, people will give up hope. The Gemara also points out, because until that date you won't have hope. I say Mashiach is coming next Tuesday. That means I don't think it's going to come tomorrow, the day after that. So even though I might sound like a great mammon, I know next Tuesday Mashiach is coming, so I'm packing my bags and I'm getting my passports in order and I'm ready to go. So even that, no. B'chol yom achakor u'day, this is that we're supposed to be expecting Mashiach really every single day, even though it's been a pretty long stretch without him. Still, im kol zeh achakor, as we said, even though this is part of it, that we still have to expect the Mashiach to come on a regular basis. It's interesting to note that this idea that a person shouldn't try to predict when the Mashiach is coming, many great people ran afoul of that. For example, Rav Sadia Gaon, one of the Gaonim who lived many years ago, predicted that the Mashiach is going to come in the year 1317, I think. In hindsight, not a good call. I once read someplace where a guy wrote, what is Emunah? What is real beliefs? So the Emunah is to still believe that Rav Sadia is right. All right, you could call that a moon. I might call it something else. You know, but so the question is, why did he do that? Right? Isn't it against the Gemara? So the Rambam actually writes about it, and he said that it's hard to understand why Rav Sadia did it. Maybe it's because he thought it so that the people were losing hope, and therefore, in order to encourage it, he went and he tried to say, it's coming. We have a date. It's coming soon. Whatever it is, but the idea is that no, we shouldn't be doing anything that indicates that we're expecting Mashiach to come anytime other than very, very soon. Now that being said, I figured maybe we'd spend some time tonight discussing what do we know about Yimus Mashiach? What's the Mashiach going to do? What are the times going to be like historically? What do we know? The truth of the matter is we know very little, but I could probably get a share out of it nonetheless. So here we go. I'm about to prove that, I hope. So first let's discuss who is the Mashiach. So in recent years there's been some discussion about this. And one major issue that comes up is that once somebody dies, is he out of the running to be Mashiach? Hypothetical question. So the Gemara actually in Sanhedrin makes a mention. At one point they said, well, what's the Mashiach? They said, so if the Mashiach is one of the living people, then it's Rebbe. If Mashiach is one of the dead people, then it's Daniel. So the question is, what? What did Mark just say there? So Rashi has two mufarshim. The more standard shot is that, obviously, we're not saying that if it's living, these are the only two candidates. The idea is, give us an example, what type of person should this be like? Right? There are, however, sects of Judaism that will accept, takes that to understand that maybe the Mashiach could be someone who's already died and comes back afterwards. It's very interesting. There are many issues with it. I'll just tell an interesting story, which will drive home one of the points I hope. They tell the story of Chaim Soloveitchik was once riding on a train. You get the impression that's all what the Gedolim did all day was ride on trains, because that's every story involves this. Right? So he's riding on the train, and a missionary comes over to him, and he tries to convince him that, you know, who is the true Lord. So he's talking to Reb Chaim, and he says, Reb Chaim said, you know, this is all very nice, but I don't really believe this, because I believe that Bar Kokhba actually was the Messiah. So the guy was taken aback. Didn't see that one coming. So he said to him, Bar Kokhba? Bar Kokhba can't be the Mashiach. He said, why not? The Gemara said he wasn't. He said, why not? He said, because he died. He said, really? They just went on. Right, so the idea is that obviously that undermines certain religions, that if you believe that once someone dies, there's no second coming, the party's over at that point. Of course, if you turn around and say Judaism accepts the fact that dead people can be Mashiach, that of course turns everything around and opens up the door to many possibilities, Bar Kokhba being one of them, the other one being the guy that this missionary was pushing. Right? So, hence the real potential problem of accepting the idea that somebody is the Mashiach when that person, in fact, has died. Usually that could be if someone had potential to be Mashiach, but once a person dies, the party's over. I mean, also from a practical point of view, if you allow dead people to be Mashiach, I mean, you'd assume that Moshe Rabbeinu would have to be in the running. You know, there's a lot of people in Tanakh, a lot of people in the Gemara that, you know, competition would be very stiff. Let's just leave it at that. So, but that's why the general normative approach is that the Mashiach is somebody who's alive. The Rambam, who throughout his discussions of Mashiach and the Messianic era, etc., is of the opinion, and he makes this very clear, that there's nothing really miraculous about it. The Rambam, as we've mentioned previously, is the ultimate rationalist. So the Rambam says that, you know, the person who's going to be the Mashiach is not going to do any miracles, he's not going to split the waters, he's not going to walk on the waters, he's not going to do anything like that. You know, what he's going to be a person who will be a great political leader, who will leave everybody back to Israel, who will leave everyone to do tshuva, and will lead us into victory against our enemies. That's what the Rambam says. That's it. There's no real excellent, miraculous type of thing that has to happen. Not everybody agrees with it, because the Gemara seems to say not that way. The Pesukim in Yeshaya, which discuss Mashiach, talks about his Moreach V'Doyen. What's Moreach V'Doyen? That he will have cases brought before him, and he'll be able to decide who's telling the truth by sense of smell. Now, that's pretty cool. I mean, from a Dayan's point of view, it's very cool. Of course, we get paid by an hour, so, you know, it's not so cool. It's bad, longer cases. But that does, many Rishonim say that sure seems sounds supernatural. So this idea that the Messiah is not going to do anything supernatural seems to be undermined by this idea in Yeshaya. Other people defend the Rambam by saying, no, that there's something that we even use in the English language called the smell test. You know, sometimes people come with you with a story and it just doesn't pass the smell test. Even though, yes, all his facts do work out and he's brought witnesses that support him, Schmecknish. It doesn't pass the smell test. So one could argue in favor of the Rambam that, in fact, when we talk about Moreach V'Doyen, it doesn't have to mean anything supernatural, as it seems that it might. So that's what the Mashiach. So how is it going to happen? So the Malachi is the last of the Nevi'im. Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi were the Nevi'im who were around at the time of the building of the second Beis HaMikdash. And at the end of Malachi, the second last pasuk, which gets repeated when we read it, is another good song. Hine Anochi Shaleach Lachem Eser Yo HaNavi Lifnei Bo Hashem HaGadol V'Hanora. Here I'm sending you Elijah the prophet Lifnei Bo Yom Hashem, before the day of God, HaGadol V'Hanora, the great and awesome day. So what the Navi is telling us is that there will not be another Navi. Malachi is saying, now that the second base of Midrash is being built, I am the final prophet until Eliyahu comes back, and he will be back the day before the great day. What is the great day? So the Gemara in Erevin tells us the great day is the day of Mashiach. That the day before Mashiach comes, Eliyahu HaNavi is going to come to the Sanhedrin. He's going to announce that so-and-so is the Mashiach and he'll be coming tomorrow. Now, based on this, the Gemara makes some very interesting comments. So, for starters, where's Eliyahu coming from? up there someplace, right? When we last met Eliyahu, right, he was in going in a fiery chariot up to the heavens. The assumption is he has to come back down from there. Now, of course, we know travel is a problem on Shabbos, so the Gemara says that Eliyahu can't come on Shabbos, so the Mashiach can't come on Sunday. An interesting statement. That's one comment it makes. Now,
what is the Sanhedrin?
Problem number two is Sanhedrin. Correct. So these are all issues that we have and which are worth discussing. So in terms of Eliyahu, so there's a basic question which was asked the Brisker Rav, where they asked him, wait a second, you tell me b'chol yom v'zeh achakol, every day I have to expect Mashiach to come, but I know Eliyahu didn't come yesterday. So if Eliyahu didn't come yesterday, how could I expect Mashiach to come today? So the Brisker Rav answered, when Eliyahu's comes, we're going to have to ask him that one also. That's a tongue-in-cheek answer. There's a really, we'll get to a better answer later. So the question is, so how is this all going to happen? That's the major question. So the issue of Sanhedrin has to be a very real and a very important question. So the Rambam in his Perush HaMishnayos, so again, in order to have Sanhedrin, you need to have rabbis. Nowadays, we don't have any rabbis. Right? Smicha died out a long time ago. It's an interesting question, how long ago? Some people say 1,600 years ago. Some people say 900 years ago. It's a pretty big gap in terms of the scholarship on when this happened. But we can safely say for a while now, no one's had smicha. Anyone who's calling themselves a rabbi, you've got to look at them and see what's going on here. There is no more smicha. The shalshalash, the chain of Mesorah, which has gone down from Moshe and giving the Torah to Yeshua, and Yeshua to Zakenim, etc., as we read in Pirkei Avos, has been broken. And in order to have a Sanhedrin, right, or any Beis Din that's going to do Dini Nefashos, capital punishment, you need people with smicha. So once we've lost the smicha, does that mean the Mashiach can't come because Eliyahu can't come to the Sanhedrin because we can't have a Sanhedrin? So the Rambam writes in his Pirush of Mishnayos that even if the chain of smicha is broken, it can be restarted. How can it be restarted? If all the rabbis in Israel agree that one person is worthy of having smicha, so they can give smicha to that person, and he can give smicha to other people as well. Historically, this happened once. Does anyone know when?
When the Cubs won the World Series.
What?
When the Cubs won the World Series.
Right, in 1300, no. What?
Rabbi Yosef Kara.
Correct. In the early 1500s, they restarted the smicha. Do you know why? Right, for very odd reason. So.
For what reason?
I'll spell it out. So, in the early 1500s, which was shortly after the late 1400s, as fate would have it, so in the late 1400s, as we know, was the Inquisition. And in the Inquisition, people were given the choice of either renounce the religion, accept Christianity, or be put to death. Some chose one way, some chose the other way. The people who chose Christianity, at least outwardly, many of them felt very bad about their decision. And eventually they were able to leave Spain or Portugal and head over to Israel. These people gathered in Israel, and they thought, their opinion, which is true according to the Rambam, that ultimately because they worshipped idols rather than giving their lives, they were liable for the punishment of Kares. Right? Kares being the second worst on the punishment list, according to the Bavli, short of being put to death. Kares means that you're cut off from the world to come. It means that you won't have children. If you have children, your children will die young. You'll die young. Very bad thing. The Rambam is of the opinion that if somebody is liable for Kares, but gets Malkus, gets lashes, the lashes undo the Kares. So these people wanted lashes. They wanted Malkus. However, to get Malkus, only, we said, a basin of people who have smicha can meet it out. Which is going to a guy and having him beat you up doesn't work. It has to be a Beis Din has to make a decision and meet out the punishment. So they made a push to restart the smicha for this purpose. And in fact, it was very controversial. There's a lot of literature on it. And in fact, smicha was given to the Ma'ari Beirav, who was the great rabbi in Tzfat at the time. It's interesting, all the rabbis at Tzfat agreed that he, as the chief rabbi, should get smicha. There was disagreement from Yerushalayim, the Maral Bach, who was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, which paled in comparison to Tzfat at the time. Right? There was hardly anybody in Yerushalayim, as opposed to Tzfat was a burgeoning Jewish community. They said, we never agreed to this. And all of Israel includes all of Israel. There was a lot of back and forth. The Maribe Rav got smicha. He gave smicha to some other well-known people, the Alshech, Moshe Alshech got. Yosef Cairo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, among other many wonderful svarim, he got smicha. Historically, it's a question how many other people got, how many generations it went on for, but basically, according to all opinions, by the 1600s it was gone. Now the Rambam put this idea in because he knew that if you don't have a Sanhedrin, everything falls apart. So that's why the Rambam says it must be there's a possibility to start it over again. It's interesting, just taking a more of a historical look, how you definitely find throughout history, whenever things get bad, there's a messianic push. Right. As much as the smicha of the early 1500s was a response to the specific need, one has to believe there's also a response to a desire for Mashiach as Judaism was bottoming out with the Inquisition. Similarly, Shabtai Tzvi, another messianic movement, followed on the footsteps of, any history? Chabonicki massacres, etc. Right? Another case. Whenever you see that. And, of course, in Israel today, I think you see a lot of these movements. There's an attempt to restart the Sanhedrin, which has been going on for a few years now. In Netanya, I think. Adam Steinsaltz is a member of the Sanhedrin, among others. Right? You know, the Lubavitch movement is probably not unrelated to this. There definitely is a relationship that whenever things get worse, unfortunately, that leads people to hope more. So that's point number one. So point number one is the idea of the Sanhedrin. So we have to believe, according to the Rambam, that the Sanhedrin can make a comeback. Yes?
Just a practical question. How do you reinstate smicha if you have this broken line? Who gets to be laying on of hands here?
So again, there is an actual laying on of hands. But the idea is, if everybody agrees, all the rabbis in Israel agree, that this person is worthy.
Got it.
And then once he has it, he can just crank it up again.
Got it.
That's good to go.
That would bring Mashiach in its own right. All the rabbis agree.
Right. That could be correct as well. So.
When the Mashiach comes.
He'll explain that one also. Put that on the list. So step number two is Eliyahu. So Eliyahu has to come. Eliyahu, as we said, can't come on Shabbos, according to the Gemara in Erevin. Now, that's a difficult Gemara for many reasons. Let's just throw out a practical one. Anyone ever make a bris on Shabbos?
Yeah.
Did Eliyahu come?
Yeah.
How could he come on Shabbos? What? From where? Slid down the chimney and he ate the bagels and lox. No, what? So we have this tradition that Eliyahu comes. He shows up at the Seder even when it's on Shabbos, right? Drinks the wine. We open the door for him. So obviously, some people talk. There's a difference. There's Eliyahu in his spiritual form, as opposed to Eliyahu in his bodily form, who is more concerned. This Gemara is actually the source for many, many interesting conversations. I'll just throw one out. There is a question which sounds ridiculous, but you'll see it's only half ridiculous. If somebody dies and comes back to life, are they chayv in mitzvahs anymore? Ever wonder that?
No.
Ah, that's where I get the big bucks for. There's a Gemara. What does the Gemara say?
Oh my gosh.
No, that's not what it says. Come get
the Gemara. You can't just say there's a Gemara.
Oh, come on, that was a good call. You couldn't say that. Come on.
I think
the Gemara in neither talks about whether you can bury somebody in tachrichim shrouds made of shatnas. So why not? Right? So I did. The guy's, we got tchias amazim. Bang! He gets up ready. He's got my vera. He's wearing shatnas. So the Gemara says he can. You can do it. Not a problem. Why not? Because I made some chafsh. Because once you're dead, you're out of the mitzvahs. So there's a question, what does that mean, once you're dead, you're out of the mitzvahs? Does it mean as long as you're dead, you're out of the mitzvahs? Because if that was the case, so when he comes back, he's still got a problem. Does it mean that at the time of, historically, when there's the resurrection of the dead, are there going to be no more mitzvahs at that point? You know, that's a possibility, but it's a little bit tricky because we believe the Torah doesn't change. So all the Torah is going to go out of style, that's a big change. That's possible. Or you say no, that once you die, that's a patur, as we say. You're free. No matter what happens afterwards, you're out. You're good to go. Now, theoretically an interesting discussion, but how many people do we know who die and come back to life? So the answer is maybe more than you think. Because Rabbi Bleich has an article about this. It's interesting. It's a good read. He says as follows. There is everybody's familiar about, most of you are probably familiar with, the relationship between Rav Yaakov Emden and Rav Yonasan Eibschitz. Yonasan Eibschitz in the 18th century was the Rav of Hamburg. He was the Gadol Hador. And Rav Yaakov Emden, who I'm sure we've heard a lot about, he's actually went by the name Yaivitz, Yaakov Emden Ben Svi. You know, the name probably doesn't mean a lot to people here, but in New York, Jacob Javits, who the Jacob Javits Center was named after, is a descendant of the Javits. Javits stands for Yaakov Emden Ben Zvi. So, little useless fact. And the road to Mount Evans is the highest automobile road in New York, in North America. Well, lots of interesting information. And Denver has more sunny days than any other city in the United States.
Mm-hmm. More than Hawaii.
What?
More than Hawaii.
There you have it. So going back to that, so Yaakov Emden and Yonasan Eibschitz did not get along. Yaakov Emden thought that Yonasan Eibschitz was a Sabbatean. He made accusations. They didn't get along well at all. What set this off? So one of the very first machokasim they had was the case of a woman who had a chicken. And she brought the chicken to the rabbi, and the chicken had no heart. And we know the rule is that if an animal is a trefa, meaning that it's going to die, then you're not allowed to eat it, even if we shucked it properly. So the question was, this chicken, which is missing its heart, can she eat it? And surprisingly, Rabbi Yonasan Eibschitz, the rabbi said, you're allowed to, it's fine. Rabbi Yaakov Emden did not take it well. He said, it doesn't have a heart. You got to have heart. Miles and miles of heart. How in the world? How can you say it's kosher? So Rabbi Yonasan Eibschitz said, no, you don't understand. Because if it didn't have a heart, it would be dead. The chicken was walking at some point. You can't think it was walking around without a heart. Obviously, it's something without a heart is dead. Obviously, it had a heart. And the cat took it. Who knows what happened to it? But there's no way the lady has a chicken that never had a heart. As opposed to, Yaakov Emden said, no, obviously, you're not going to live a long time without a heart. But there's a possibility for sometimes living. The living guy says, an appendage that was somewhat similar to heart. So that was one of their first machokasim. So the machokas is, if someone thing doesn't have a heart, is it a trefa? He says, or is it dead? Assuming that something without a heart is dead, which is not a crazy assumption, what if someone has a heart transplant? There is a point where the person's lying on the table.
No.
The guy's got no heart. Right? The chest cavity is empty. If I am assuming, which is not a crazy assumption, that somebody with an empty chest cavity is dead, if the guy, at some way of the day, starts walking around again, he was dead, and now he's alive. If I wanted to go a step further on that, I could say, well, let's say the guy has a heart, but it hasn't beat for the last 5 hours or so. A non-functioning heart. I could argue that person's dead as well. even though the person just might be undergoing a bypass right now. Now, if I would assume such, that I would say that people who had bypass surgery were dead and now come back to life, that opens up a Pandora's box of issues. Is he still married to his wife? Do they have to get married again if they want to? And according to this idea, what about a Kohen? Can Kohen be around? Is there a mitzvah to bury the guy in the middle? That, of course, would assume hurt the success rate significantly instead of burying the buried. But moving on here, so the question is, okay, so let's say if I assume that this person was dead, and I assume that the way I read that Gemara Nida is that when someone's dead, you have a mitzvah, should I try to make sure whenever I go to someone's house and they say, Rabbi, do you want to make Kiddush? Should I say, no, you can, assuming you haven't had any heart surgery. Thank you, Shinachai of Mitzvahs, I'll make my own, thank you. So believe it or not, some people point to our Gemara about Eliyahu when they say, we've got the answer to the question. How so? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that Eliyahu used to go by a different name, and that was? Pinchas. Right? Eliyahu and Pinchas, same person. Now, at some point, he died. Who died? Where he died? So the Zohar tells us that so when Pinchas kills Cosby and Zimri, he receives two brachas. Brisku nasolam, meaning that he now became a Kohen. And SBC shalom, the covenant of peace. Now what does covenant of peace mean? It sounds nice. So I think you... like when the show gives out, and this year's Covenant of Peace Award goes to the Schwartzes for their excellent work. Right, so what is the Covenant of Peace? So that's a little bit unclear. The Zohar saying, you know what the Covenant of Peace is? The Covenant of Peace is that he was brought back to life. Because after Pinchas killed Cosby of Zimri, it was such a... he actually dropped dead, and God brought him back. So we know that Pinchas at one point was dead, now he's alive again. And we know that he's not allowed to travel on Shabbos from the Gemara Nehemiah, because Eliyahu can't come on Shabbos. So you see from here that, in fact, dead people, even when they come back, are still chayv in mitzvahs. There are other Gemaras as well. It's a fascinating topic. So, for example, in Yechezkel, you have the famous dry bones. So the dry bones, that's not just the cartoon. It's actually named after a parak in Yechezkel, where God takes Yechezkel and says to him, behold, you see this valley of dry bones, they're going to come back to life. It's a Haftarah we read. So the Gemara discusses, these people came back to life. Was it a temporary thing? They were up for the day and then they were dead again? Or did they go and live happily productive lives afterwards? So one opinion is, I have two opinions. One opinion is, it was a curtain call, they came back, and that was it. It was over. Yeah, second, but then another Rabbi Gemara gets up and says, no. In fact, one of them was my grandfather, and I still have his tefillin. Indicating that he was dead, came back to life, still put on tefillin. So there's a fair amount of discussion. It's interesting. So I went, as was probably mentioned at the time they were still introducing me, I went to Karen Biavda for a while, and learning in Israel, and I used to enjoy sitting in the library. It was a nice, quiet place to learn, and whenever the new books came in, I used to thumb through it. So this Sefer came out, Minchas Osher, some guy, Osher Anshel Miller. It was a small volume. I think it was 20-25 tshuvas, responsa. And I opened it up, look at the index, see what it's about. Of these 20-25 tshuvas, three of them were regarding whether if someone dies and comes back to life, whether they are chayv mitzvahs, and two of them were about whether a golem can count towards a minion. So this was a full 20-25% of the book was dedicated to this. But I remember thinking, what? Until I found out who Rabbi Miller is. So if you look at the book, it says that Rabbi Miller was the rabbi before the war in Transylvania. So the assumption, this was Levaisa, you know, Rabbi, we want to eat from the minion, but Frankenstein brought his monster, and the mummies here also. This actually came up for him. This wasn't theoretical. Ah, then it all made sense to me. All right, let's get back to where we were. So going back, so our understanding is that Eliyahu is going to come the day before. He's going to announce that Mashiach is here, and with that, with great joy, we will be ready to accept the Mashiach. Yes?
Can Mashiach come on Shabbos?
Yeah,
because
Eliyahu can come Erev Shabbos. Right, Eliyahu can come on Friday, and the...
Yeah.
According to one opinion, the Gemara, it's not true. See, because Eliyahu can't come on Friday, people are too busy.
And we can't travel to Israel.
What?
We can't go to Israel.
Well, that's the reason to make Aliyah, so you don't have to worry. That's your problem. It's not their problem if you can't make it on time. So, it kind of, it reminds me of an old Jewish joke. Ah, the best type. The one was the Aparitz. What Aparitz is? Land, Polish landowner. And so he's talking Aparitz, and one of these landowners said, the other one, I've got the best Jew. This guy, Moshe, he'll do anything I tell him to do. He's a great worker, this, that, you name it, he'll do it. He'll say, nah, yeah, I tell you, it's the best worker ever. He said, yeah, test him. Call him and tell him not to be Jewish, see what he'll do. Okay, fine. Calls him in, Moshe! That's something I want you to do. Anything, what do you want to do? I want you not to be Jewish anymore. What? No more Jewish anymore. Let me go talk to my wife. He goes talk to his wife. Says, Baruch says, we can't be Jewish anymore. What do we do? He said, what are we gonna, if he wants, he'll kill us. We won't have any food. I can't be Jewish. That's what Baruch said. We go back and they tell him, okay. Baruch, we're not Jewish anymore. Deal. Okay, this goes on 2-3 months, and Paris calls him in finally and says, listen, Moshe, I don't care, be Jewish, do whatever you want. It was just a bad act, now you can be Jewish again. He goes home and tells his wife, good news, Paris said he can be Jewish again. And she said, can he wait till after Pesach? Come on. Erev Shabbos, who's got time for Mashiach? So then the Mashiach, God willing, will come. There's a very interesting discussion of historically how will things happen. Will the Mashiach come first, or will the Beis HaMikdash be built first? No, what do you think?
Well, that's
a
Mashiach, so a long
way. Well, let me put it another way. Should we be building the Beis HaMikdash now, or should we be waiting for the Mashiach?
Some people think yes.
They do.
In your house, you have a place of the...
Right, so...
Yeah,
that great Goldman Oath that's on top of the steps now. Right? But they're not building the building, are they?
No.
I don't think so.
Isn't it the Mashiach won't come until there's peace among all Jews?
Or will he make peace?
Yeah, so if it's the former, then we better wait.
Well, I was thinking about it again, but is it related? Right? Meaning, we don't have a base on English, therefore, we're missing Korban Pesach. We're missing a lot because of it. Should we step forward and start working on this? You know,
we're not going
out. So listen, you guys, you got that big gold dome there, but you got another one in Alameda down by the JCC. So why don't we just call it even and let's move on? You know, something like that. So we can negotiate this. Yes.
Have a busy Dutch without a Kohen Gadol to.
So why assume we don't have a Kohen Gadol?
Well, because we know we have...
It's because everyone's getting bimkum calling every week.
Who is able to appoint a Kohen Gadol?
I mean, sorry, who's going to appoint the Kohen Gadol? Why do we need to appoint one?
Doesn't Hashem appoint...
Whatever, so pick straws. Someone's got to be a Kohen Gadol. Right? Yeah, that doesn't bother me so much. We can get a Kohen Gadol. I'm sure a lot of people... I bet you got to pay for it even. I don't think you got to get a salary. I don't think you get one, no problem. So it's interesting, so this basic question is not, we don't even have agreement on. The Gemara in Titus discusses why do we say Shemona Esri in the order we do. So the Gemara goes through Bracha Bracha. This comes before this because of that. That comes before it goes, right? Right? First we do, right, you know? Hashim, did the Gemara?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's get to Semach David. Why does it come before? It comes afterwards?
Yeah.
What?
Shmak Aleinu.
Okay. Let's go before it. Okay? What comes before is Samach David?
Yerushalayim.
Why is it going in that order? So Rashi comments, that's what happened. First with Ne Yerushalayim, first we're going to have a Beis HaMikdash, then a Samachtam, and then the Mashiach's going to come. The Rambam, however, says it the other way. The Rambam says that the Mashiach is going to do certain things, and one of the things he's going to do, he's going to build the Beis HaMikdash. It's interesting to note that the Nusach HaTfil between Ashkenazim and Sephardim somehow, in a very odd way, indicates this Machokah. So let's talk about Yav Yavam. Right? So first it says Mashiach, and then it says Yerushalayim. I mean, the way that Ashkenazim daven is the way that the Rambam has it. Anyone Sfaradi here? Shabtai? Yefo Shabtai? Hakadosh Shabtai? Sushi in the next best thing. No? What was the Nusach supposed to say? So the Sfaradim, and I know you're not going to argue with me, say it in the opposite order. Right? The Sfaradim first say Zichron Yerushalayim Yerecha, and then Zichron Ben David Mashiach Tzidkecha. So it's interesting that the davening of the Ashkenazim replicates the Shita of the Rambam, as opposed to the davening of the Sfaradim replicates the Ashkenazi. So one other place in Tefillah where this comes up, also for Sfaradim, we don't actually say it, but even Nusach Sfarad does say it, and it's a Kalbach song, so people might know it. Right? In the Harachman, Harachman who? Yizakenu. So again, that's the Ashkenaz one. Ayay harachman, Michayinu, Uvin yon beis hamikdash. What? No? Anybody? So they also, it has it the way that we do, where we do it. In the extended Svari Dert remix of the Rachmans, you have it in that order as well. So there is some disagreement. A more major issue is, well, how's this third beis hamikdash going to come? Two possibilities. Either we're going to build it, or it's going to come down from on high, and that will be the end of it. The Gemara tells us, actually the Chumash tells us, that there's something called the Korban HaOmer, that on the second day of Pesach, which is the first day of Chol Moed in Israel, we used to be a Korban called the Korban HaOmer. Now we begin to count the, rhymes with Korban HaOmer, Sfiras HaOmer. Right? Where we, what was the Korban HaOmer? So the Korban HaOmer, what it did in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, was it allowed you to eat the new wheat. Any wheat that grows prior to Pesach, you cannot eat until the Korban HaOmer is brought. Discussion whether it applies nowadays, that's why some people are makbid on Yashan. People who care about Yashan will not eat the wheat beforehand. Those people who don't care about Yashan will eat the wheat whenever. That's what Yashan is. If there is no Beis HaMikdash, then technically at the end of the first day you can start eating it. Even though when there was a Beis HaMikdash, you had to wait until some point into the day when they brought the Korban. But Yochanan and Zakkai said, no. Now we wait until the end of the second day to do it. Right? So Yom HaNef is called Kula Aser. Why? Shema Yibana Beis HaMikdash. Because how do we know? Here I'll be sitting in Petach Tikva, I'll be sitting in Denver, I'll start eating my Chadash, without realizing that the Beis HaMikdash was rebuilt, and they're actually bringing a korban today. Now the question is, whoa.
I've got forms and stuff like that.
I don't know if anyone's ever tried to do construction in Israel, but there's no way you're going to get the Beis HaMikdash up in a day. that you know, everyone getting together and picking who should be a rabbi is much more likely than that happening. So Rashi and Tosfos, why ask the question, what are we so concerned about? It's going to be if the Beis HaMikdash, people would have known about it already. So Rashi and Tosfos both say the third Beis HaMikdash is going to be different. The third Beis HaMikdash is going to come down fully loaded from on high, and whatever has to be removed will be removed. And it was, and unlike the first two Bate Mikdash, where we had to build it ourselves, the third Beis HaMikdash will come pre-assembled right where it's supposed to be, which begs the question as to what are those people building exactly in the Old City. And you ask them the question, they don't have any very satisfactory answers, as I've asked. So, what?
Those aren't your shidduchs. They're from
some... Right. So, other people say that there's indications not that way. So how does this work? So this will go back to the question that the Brisker Rav asked earlier. The Gemara tells us that in Yeshaya, says that the Mashiach will come be'ita achishana. In its time, it will come quickly. So the Gemara asks, wait a second. You can't have it both ways. If it's coming in its time, it's not coming quickly. If it's coming quickly, it's going to come before its time.
Well, if it's coming in its time, but it comes quickly.
So again, it's been 1900 years. It's hard to call this quickly.
No.
I understand in this community people are used to things starting late, but this is a little over the top already. Right? Good? So the world doesn't offer it. The end was very quick, right? Like Fletch. The very, very end was very quick. So the Gemara says no. There are two possibilities as to how everything works out historically. One's called Be'ito, and the other's called Achishana. Right? What does Be'ito mean? Be'ito means that there is a date. There is a final date. We don't know what that date is, but come heck or high water, by that date the Mashiach comes, whether we're deserving, whether we're not deserving, that's the day. That's when it's going to happen. And there's a second possibility. That means a date prior to that date, the Mashiach can come as well, if we in fact are deserving. And the Gemara goes on to explain that this understanding of the two possibilities as to how the Mashiach comes explain many of the issues that you have if you read through the Pesukim in the Tanakh. So at one point, the Mashiach is famously known as an Ani Rochiv al Chamor, an old man, a poor man riding on a donkey. In other cases, it's explained that it seems like the Garucci's brothers, that you're having these flashes of lights, and it's tremendous things happening. So the Gemara explains, no, there's two possibilities. There's the Be'ito, there's Achishana. If the Messiah comes for no other reason than we hit the date, even though we're not deserving, so therefore it'll be a very natural process, you know, where however history will play itself out, and then the Mashiach will come. If it comes because we are deserving, it's a whole different ballgame, right? Then everything will happen in a miraculous way. So, this idea can be expanded. So, for example, will the Beis HaMikdash come down miraculously, or will we build it? So again, it depends what type of messianic era we end up having. If we end up having the type of era that, you know, it happened because we got there, you know, congratulations, right? So, you know, then we will politically get autonomy, and we will build the base of Migdash, and everything will move on. If it's because we are deserving, whole different ballgame, yes.
Does that mean that
in
the natural way that
you won't
be
Tchias Mason? No. Yimos Mashiach and Tchias Mason are two separate things we assume. So too, let's go back to earlier in this year, we discussed the issue of how can I expect Mashiach to come today if Eliyahu didn't come yesterday? So the answer, the real answer probably is, well, it depends. Yes, if there is this natural progression, then Eliyahu comes and he makes his case and goes on, as opposed to if we are deserving, the fact that Eliyahu didn't come yesterday is not going to stop the Mashiach from coming today.
I guess the question is, Tzipi de Yeshua, do you see everything around you, you know, people are not doing tshuva, so are you supposed to still be mitzvah de Yeshua?
So the Chafetz Chaim asked this question. You could have been the Chafetz Chaim. Could have been a star. So the Chafetz Chaim said, I don't understand. I look around at my generation, and I compare it to previous generations. It's hard to imagine that our generation is better than previous generations. And if all the previous generations did not reach the level of bringing the Mashiach, how in the world could I possibly expect this generation to do better? So the Chafetz Chaim answers, well, you got to look at this way. If in the time of the Gemara, the Mashiach was to come, the Mashiach would be coming 1,000 years early. 1,500 years early. And in order to bring that Mashiach 1,500 years, you need a mighty big zechus. But now, how many more years are left? 200 on the high side, right? Right? Likely less. So therefore, it could be we're down to 10, we're down to 15 until the ultimate date. So therefore, the Chafetz Chaim says, the amount of zechus you need is related to how much earlier you want to bring it. So therefore, since historically, there's a good 1,400 years less of schlepping that we have to do than they do, yeah, they may be on a higher level, but the work they have to do is that much more than us.
We're saying there's a date?
What?
We're saying there's a date that has to come back?
A case. The end, as we call it.
But it could come any time before
then. Could come before then, can't come afterwards.
Are you familiar with like any of the people who like hold by like the findings of like the values of gematria that allude to the year that Mashiach will come?
So we mentioned that earlier. We said it's awesome.
The discovery programs.
You know, it's kind of... What I say about discovery covers is if it makes you religious, good. And I'm happy for you. I've never been overly impressed, you know. I thought, as someone put it to me, if you do gematria with English, right, giving A is 1, B is 2, Jesus equals Messiah. I never tried it. But, eventually.
You just mentioned 200 years. At least... Meaning the end of 6,000 years.
Correct.
So that is the same problem, right?
What?
Saying that in 200 years, the Mashiach is definitely going to come by then.
Right.
So that's the day, huh?
There you have it. It's taped. It's official now. It's going online. There's no backing out. Gemara says that. The Gemara says that there are 6,000, the first 2,000 years of existence is Tohu, the next 2,000 years is Torah, and the next 2,000 years is Mashiach. Meaning that so the first 2,000 years, nothing much was happening. What happened in the year 2000? So Avraham Avinu was born in the year 1948. Right? And according to this opinion, at the age of 52, Avraham Avinu discovered God. Which is right. So therefore, up until the first 2,000 years, nobody recognized God. So that was one era. The next 2,000 years was the years that we got the Torah and we developed it. The final 2,000 years are the years of Mashiach. That doesn't mean it's Yimos of Mashiach. We've noticed that it hasn't been. What it means is these are the 2,000 years that's potential that the Mashiach could come at any point. But it's got to fall at some point in those 2,000 years. Right, so that's why we have this tradition that within 6,000, by the year 6,000, that's where the number comes from.
Why 6,000?
Because the Gemara said so.
But is there any opinions that hold otherwise?
Not that I'm aware of. Now, what?
Does that say 6,000 or is it
Bayat Hashvi? No, so it says, Alpayim Rishonim, the first 2,000 are Tohu. Alpayim, the Shniim are Torah, and the part of the Alpayim Shniim are Yimotz HaMashiach. So there's a lot of Erev HaShvi. Alpidrush Kotim Erev HaShvi. But the Gemara lo Katuv Shekadev. So that's what we see. Now what happens afterwards? People don't like the end of the Gemara. The Gemara says the next 1,000 years are the 1,000 years we count Trias Mesim. And then the world gets destroyed. So we tend to ignore that last part. Because, I'll start worrying about it 1,100 years from now. Right? Doesn't really... people who worry about the sun running out of energy, they worry about these things as well. But, I'm cool for the time being. So you have this idea that there's two basic ways it could happen. There's the Be'ita and there's the Achishana. So whenever you have these two discussions, how is the Beis HaMikdash going to come? What's the Mashiach going to look like? What about Eliyahu? So it's always important to keep in mind that there are these two possibilities. Now, if one reads through the Navi, you'll see that there are other things that happen with Yimos HaMashiach. One of them is the famous Milchemes Gog u'Magog. People will tell you oftentimes that you have to move to Eretz Yisrael, you have to make Aliyah, because Gog u'Magog, Mashiach is coming, it's the place to be. If you actually read through the Navi, it's not such a good idea. because the Navi says it's going to happen is that the Umos Ha'olam, the nations of the world, are going to attack Israel and basically kill everybody. Right? They discuss that.
They're going to come for Shabbat.
What?
They're
going to
come to New York for Shabbat.
Wait, we're not coming. It's a bad day to be there. You know, and then afterwards, in the world of Israel, there'll be some miracle, there'll be a great earthquake, and that everything will turn around at that point. So, you know, in terms of Gog and Magog, it's good. You know, what they talk about, the Chevrei Mashiach, the birth pangs of Mashiach, are going to be a very, very difficult time. Interesting. They had something in Yeshiva. They have, once a year, they have the midwinter conference where the rabbinic alumni come visit Yeshiva. So somebody had a great idea once that maybe we want to ask them if they want to give shiur while they're here. Now, of course, that was one of the rare ideas. Was able to insult everybody. You know, the rabbis came in and said, "Are you saying that I really wanted to be giving yeshiva because I was incompetent? That's why I'm a shul rabbi, and now you want to give me a chance for a day?" As opposed to the rabbi was thinking, "You think any monkey could do my job? You bring this guy, he's going to do it." But despite that, so some people took them up on the offer, and I ended up with getting one of them. So this fellow came to give my share, and he said that he had written a book, and he said that, you know, there are three, the Gemara tells us there are three Milchemes Gog u'Magog, there are three wars, and you know, this will be the third one, etc. So he said the first war was 1948, the second one was 1967, and the third Gog u'Magog was 1973. So the guy said to me, "What do you think about that?" I said, "I'll note that we're missing the Mashiach." It'll be nice if he was right, but, you know. Interesting, if you look in the Lev Eliyahu, of Eliyahu Lopian, who was a well-known Rav in England back in the day, but more in Israel, he said, he writes that when the Chafetz Chaim, shortly before he passed away, had the fine prediction. So the Chafetz Chaim died in 1933. Okay, I'll take that. Which was after World War I, prior to World War II. So he said that, you know, we've just gone through the first of the Gog and Magog, and he said, you know, the next 10 years or so, 10, 20 years, there'll be a war that will put the first one, will make the first one seem like a joke. He said, you know, and that will be followed sometime after by a third war, you know, which will be a terrible destruction for the Jews, but that will ultimately lead to Mashiach. So we have this idea that, you know, there's still a very significant hurdle to make it through, assuming that we haven't actually had the wars of Gog and Magog, which would see that we at least haven't had the third one yet. What can we do to avoid it? Moving to Israel is not going to work. What's our other choice? So the Gemara only offers one idea. The Gemara says if somebody wants to avoid the birth pangs of Mashiach and wants to avoid the Gog and Magog, what they should do is eat Shalosh Shudas. What a bargain! What a bargain! How's that for a deal? That's all you have to do. The Gemara tells us in Shabbos that whoever eats Shalosh Shudas is spared from it. The only suggestion that's offered. I'll note that men and women both alike are chayiv in Shalosh Shudas. It's interesting. I'm impressed that in Denver many women come to Shalosh Shudas. You don't see that in most communities. Right? It's a positive Shabbos mitzvah, just like women are chayiv to make kiddush, they're also chayiv in Shalosh Shudas. And that's the long and short of my advice for Gog and Magog. It's a pretty bad thing. It's a simple pill. It'll get you out of it relatively easily. You can't use your flexible spending account on it. However, I think we say whatever you spend on Shabbos, you get back, so it's fully reimbursable. So it's not a bad idea. The last issue, which we'll just touch on, is the issue of, well, what's the most Mashiach going to look like? So that's, again, a major machokas. So if you, those of you who have even the slightest knowledge of Yeshaya, will know that it involves lions playing with lambs and you know, large bears eating grass and the like. So the Ramban, Nachmani, says that's literal. And in fact, human nature is going to change, and violent animals will no longer be violent, and in fact, maybe lions are going to go vegetarian. And the Ramban explains that in fact that was the original nature of these animals, These animals naturally were nonviolent. Something happened at around the time of the marble. He discusses it in Noah. But in fact, he says literally, human nature is going to change. People are going to live longer. It's all going to be very different. The Rambam, Maimonides, not surprisingly disagrees. His famous, he quotes Shmuel in the Gemara, says, Ein bein olam hazel and Moshe Mashiach, el shibud malchus bolvad. Translating, there's no difference between this world and the Messianic era, other than the fact that politically the Jews are going to be on top. That's the whole difference. But all this discussion of lions and lambs and swords and plowshares, that's all metaphorical. The swords might not be, but the lions and the lambs for sure is. That's not. So this is a major machlokas between the Ramban, Nachmanides, and Ramban Maimonides. There are two other opinions. I'll just throw them out there. The opinion of the Radvaz and the Radak. The Radvaz is of the opinion that they're both right. Du hast lasht. He said, how are they both right? He said that in the nature of animals, nature is going to change in the land of Israel. But in Chutz La'aretz, everything's going to be the same. What? It's not bad. If you're alive at that point, you might enjoy that. That's point number one. The Radak has it a little different. He said it's going to change for Jews, but not for non-Jews. Okay, he doesn't buy the geographic difference. He buys that. What's the bottom line? The truth is nobody knows. Nobody knows. Doesn't really know. We should study it. We should look forward to it. The bottom line is not really the sense, because it's coming any day now. Right? We know we're all very close. Mashiach is hopefully right around the corner. We have to believe it. It's one of the things they're going to ask us. And hopefully, if we do look forward, you know, that doesn't mean running around shouting we want Mashiach, not necessarily, but it means quietly in our hearts of hearts, expecting Mashiach to come, hoping for Mashiach to come, appreciating what it would mean for the Mashiach to come. Hopefully that will push along history in the way that we would like it to go and the way we assume it will go. Yes, questions? He had a hand up. He's going to get to ask first. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have a question back on the Fast Mason subject. Also heard an opinion that says that there's like a bone in the back of your neck.
The loose bone.
Is taken from the person when they die and is put back into another person and like a newborn.
So let me tell you how it really goes. And this is true, because I heard it from Shlomo Kalbach, personally. So the Gemara tells us, how to do Kalbach. Everybody knows that there's one bone in the back of the neck called the loose bone. And that bone is never destroyed. And that is the bone that Tchiyas HaMeisim will come from. That the person will regrow out of that bone. And everybody also knows that the loose bone only gets nourishment from the suda of Malava Malka, from the meal that we eat on Motzei Shabbos, that's where he gets his nourishment from. So the Rebbe of Shlema said, what are those tough things in common? What does the suda of Malava Malka have to do with Tchiyas HaMeisim? So everybody knows that Adam HaRishon was created on Friday at 6 o'clock. Then he ate from the Eitz HaDa'as, then he named the animals at 7 o'clock. And Chava was created at 8 o'clock. And you know, and he had come heaven at 9 o'clock. He ate from the Eitz HaDa'as at the 10th hour of the day. And had he only waited until Shabbos, it would have been allowed. But he ate too early. Now, what happened? He ate from the Eitz HaDa'as, and his body was nourished from it. And anything that was nourished from the Eitz HaDa'as, by necessity, had to die. However, the loose bone didn't get any nourishment from the Eitz HaDa'as, because it only gets nourishment from Malav HaMalka. Only eat on Motzei Shabbos. So the loose bone never got nourishment from the Eitz HaDa'as. That's why it's never destroyed, and that's why Tchiyas HaMeisim comes from it. That's what Shlomo said. Later in life, I saw that the Torah Tamima said the same thing. I couldn't believe that Torah Tamima stole it from Rav Shlomo. After I saw the Mishnah Berurah says the same thing also. It's tough being Rav Shlomo. Yes.
So if we know that the third Gog and Magog hasn't happened, then are we supposed to look forward to a bunch of Jews dying before Mashiach comes?
I'll go on record saying we don't look forward to a bunch of Jews dying. We don't look forward to people dying in general. What I will say, so there's a statement of the Gemara that I think it was Rabbi Huda, when the Chafei Talmud said, you know, I look forward to the Mashiach but I don't want to be around for the history beforehand. So again, we should be nervous about the history beforehand, but it is a necessity to get where we want to go. Much like that road to Summit Lake. A necessary evil to get where we want to go. Yes.
There's positive things mentioned in the Sefer of current times. Did his conclusions come from the Gemara, where he says like it's being gathered of the exiles and people will be learning and doing teshuva? He makes a list of why this is the time of Mashiach. Is that list from?
I hope he's right.
Okay. Yeah.
So, it's hard to say. No, this goes to a more basic politically charged question about whether when we say Tefil Rishon Medin, whether we say Reishis Michas Gul Aseinu. So in the Dat Minyan, as in most Minyanim that say Tefil Rishon Medin, we say that Reishis Michas Gul Aseinu. This is the beginning of the budding of the ultimate redemption. Right? Some people think that that's not correct to say. Who are these anti-Zionists? Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb. He take that. Didn't see that one coming, right? He's of the opinion that, yes, he hopes, as we all hope, that the establishment of the State of Israel is part of the historical playing out that will lead to the Mashiach. However, there is no guarantee that this is true. It might look like it, we might hope for it, but in the event that, God forbid, the State of Israel was ever, at this point, left Jewish hands, the religion would live on. Mashiach would still come eventually. Which is why Rabbi Lamb opposes this, because he thinks this type of hashkafa led to Yigal Amir. But if you assume that somebody who's giving back part of Israel is stopping the Mashiach, then it makes sense to kill him. So, in all these cases, we're very hopeful that these people are right, and one of them's going to be right eventually, but you know, we have to keep in mind that history will play out however it plays out, and we have no guarantee that this is right.
Hints aside, is there any explicit reference in the Chumash to either the idea of Mashiach or the mitzvah wafer? And if the answer is no, how can it be one of the Kareimuna and not the singular Torah?
So, the Torah does not really directly talk about Mashiach. You know, there are allusions to it, there's no direct. The Navi talks about it directly. The real issue is nobody really talks about Tchias HaMeisim, and the Gemara raises that issue. Right? The Gemara in Perek Chelek, which is where all of this is discussed, in the last Perek of Sanhedrin, it says, Kol Yisrael Yishvam Chelek Olam Haba, Shenema, V'amech Kulam Tzadikim. Everybody has a portion of the world to come. They make songs about that. They leave out the end of the Mishnah, which says, and the following people don't have a Chelek in Olam Haba. Right? If you're not Bikaris, right, you don't have a Chelek in Olam Haba. So who's an apikoros? The Gemara says, whoever says that there's no tchias hamesim in a Torah, whoever denies that the Torah says that it's going to have to be tchias hamesim. So the Gemara says, yeah? Where does it say that? So the Gemara says, well, maybe it says it over there. So no, it doesn't say it. Well, maybe over there, maybe that. No, it doesn't say it. Then it goes around like, no. So the Gemara itself discusses, it's a very odd thing. You know, it's such a major issue, why isn't it there? So the Gemara's answers, Rishonim have answers, etc. But the Ramban has a nice piece on it. But the bottom line is that for whatever reason, it was left out explicitly. But Mashiach really wasn't. Look at Zechariah, look at Yeshayah, it's really there. Right? Tchias HaMeisim is the one that's really missing. Yes?
Is there any more information or discussion on Tchias HaMeisim? Because I've heard of a lot of questions, such as, I think, about the famous one of the woman's, well, the husband's come back, which one she married to, you know, and stuff like it.
Somebody says that that's the famous one.
I've heard that's the famous one. That's not, oh, well, fine. Well, that's
well, again, I am a fourth reincarnation of somebody.
Which
of us are coming back?
You know, and if your body's not intact, is the whole thing coming back? Or
right, or we had the cartoons where you'll be a pile of ashes with two eyes, kind of stuff. After Wile E. Coyote gets blown up, will you look like that? So the Rambam has an Igeres, where he lists off all these questions, and he answers it all with one easy answer. I have no idea. there's a lot of discussion about it. Nobody knows. There's a lot of interesting ideas out there. Perhaps there are two Tchias HaMeisim. Who does everyone come back to? Only Tzadikim. I remember it was, so one of the opinions out there is that, if assuming we believe in Gilgulim, that we believe in reincarnation, whoever is the most worthy of all the Gilgulim or it comes back. So I read the Baba Sali book. Got that one? So in the Baba Sali book, he was of the opinion that he was a Gilgul of Yechezkel Hanavi. And he was very excited about this. I would have been very upset. I personally hope that I'm a Gilgul of horse thieves. So when the competition will be a little bit of a lower bar for me to get by. Yechezkel Hanavi, I would have given it up by now. So, no one knows.
And Judaism is a very concrete religion. So here you have this idea of Tzipita Yeshua, which is not really a mitzvah, but when we go up to Shemayim, Hashem is going to ask us.
Why is it a mitzvah?
Tzipita Yeshua. Well, it's not a Tariq mitzvah, so is it?
Well, again,
is it a mitzvah derabbanan?
It's a derisa, if it's anything.
It is a derisa.
I mean,
okay.
The Kari Emuna, probably Nichon Anochi Hashem Alakach or something like that.
Okay. So when it says Tzipita Yeshua, and what we do concretely, I guess the question is to fulfill the mitzvah of Tzipita Yeshua.
That's a great question. So I always wondered, you know, if I really believed Mashiach is coming tomorrow, what would I be investing in?
Torah. Transportation.
Apartment in Israel.
Again, so real estate in Israel, yes or no? Yeah, that makes sense because we're worth a lot of money. On the other hand, if it's just going back to the Shvatim, I'm about to lose it when Mashiach comes. So that was a bad investment.
Why? Because you have
the money.
No, because I'm enough Tommy and I bought an apartment in Russia and now it's not mine anymore. What? Who said not Shvatim? So again, if we don't say Shvatim, who gets it? I mean, I assume that even though I don't live in Israel, I have a chelek in Eretz Yisrael. And someone's living there, they're going to have to get out. Right? So I assume if I wanted to show my moon, I'd be investing on livestock. Middle Eastern livestock. I think that's where the money is. Cows, sheep, turtle doves. Turtle doves are big. Lots of yolettuses that have to start paying up.
Get futures.
Right,
I'm
you know.
Futures market.
Right, going to livestock futures in the Middle East in particular, I think that would show your emunah. The idea is not to do things that don't show your emunah. Like I mentioned, the comment about, you know, yeah, when Mashiach comes, you know, have it more in the forefront. Yes. Hassan, you again.
Is there a Gemara that says that it will only come in the completely righteous or completely not righteous?
Correct.
And
you see.
So how can you ever have where it's completely one or the other?
When Elio comes, he'll explain that also. I mean, the idea is, the more standard idea is that this Mashiach fellow is going to be the type of personality that's going to leave everybody right to Tshuva. We've almost had that in history, right? Chizkiah came pretty close. Right, Yoshiah wasn't that far off. So, you know, it's not that crazy to think about it. We have trouble thinking about this in modern day times. How could it happen? But, you know, as much as the world has changed, human nature, I don't think, has changed that much. Anything else?
Yes. Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David.
Mashiach ben Yosef, there's a possibility we've already passed that. Maybe we believe that we've gotten past Mashiach ben Yosef. So.
Who was it?
What?
Who was it?
Please raise your hand.
Do you want to know that?
Different opinions. Who knows? It's unclear there is such thing as Mashiach ben Yosef. You know, that's a. And if there is, it's unclear if we're still waiting for it. So. Okay. Thank you very much.